board meeting tonight. Today is Tuesday, September 26, 2017. It is 5 o'clock. We are in the boardroom of the Logan City School District offices. And those present are board members Ann Geary, Lisa Hopkins, myself, Christy Cooley, as well as Jeff Barbin, our superintendent, Frank Schofield. And we'd like to excuse Connie Morgan tonight, as well as Jenny Johnson. They are attending training today, so they will not be here with us. We are grateful that all of you are here tonight. We do have a very short agenda. That is because we are missing two of our board members, and we want to make sure that whenever we have major discussion or action items that we have a majority of our board members here, so we do have a reduced agenda for this evening. We're going to start tonight with our opening ceremony, and Dawson Barbin will lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Dawson. He is a student at Logan High in what grade, 10th grade? Oh, 9th grade. So thank you, Dawson.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Dawson, for helping us with that. We appreciate your service to the board this night. First on our agenda is a public comment. Do we have public comment tonight? All right, we do have public comment tonight. I just want to remind those making public comment that you have, if you'll just please state your name. I have your address here on the paper, so that is what we need. You need to limit your comments to 3 minutes. Jeff Barbin will be our timekeeper. He will give you a 30-second reminder, and then after those 30 seconds, you'll need to conclude your remarks. And if you're speaking for a group, you have 5 minutes. So our first public comment and only would be Caroline St. Ange. Did I say that correct?
Yes.
Oh, very nice. Caroline.
Good evening. My name is Caroline St. Ange. We meet again. I'm just back here as a follow-up from my June presentation about the vision screenings. I brought some more copies if you needed more. I don't know if it was... probably hasn't been talked about, obviously, because summer and all that stuff. So I was just touching base again, see if that's a possibility to get on the board meeting subject, or do you remember that?
Yes, we do. Frank, I believe that the process would be that we would run that through our district health nurse, Kelly Hansen. So we will have a conversation with Kelly and feel like if that's something that she wishes to address the board with, then we will certainly pursue that. But you're right, we are just barely getting back into the swing of things since summer vacation. So we will follow through with Kelly. I'll have superintendent follow through with Kelly, and then we will determine whether that's an issue that needs to be before the board or if that's something that Kelly can handle directly. So, but
okay.
We appreciate that
thank
reminder
you.
For us, and we'll follow through. So
I was, other teachers were supposed to come today, and they must have been held up in meetings or something. So
okay.
I'm still the lone soldier.
Okay. Well, we are grateful for the lone soldier. So thank you so much for reminding us about that. We'll follow through. Thank you. Thank you very much, and we appreciate your comments tonight. We'll now go into our consent calendar, which is action on minutes dated September 12th of 2017, personnel, expenditures and receipts, extra pay for extra duty for licensed personnel, and fast forwards revised school land trust plan.
I would move adoption of the consent calendar.
Okay, the motion's been made by Ann to approve the consent calendar.
I'll second.
Seconded by Lisa. Do we have any comments or questions about the consent calendar? Seeing none, all in favor of approving?
Aye.
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 All right, consent calendar passes. Next on our agenda is action on land transfer between the Logan City School District and the Corporation of the Presiding Bishop of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, referring parking stalls used by the Logan Seminary building, excuse me. That will be by our business administrator, Jeff Barbin.
Okay, so
When we redid 100 South, we eliminated the entrance for that the seminary had to their parking, which is their property. And so they came to us and told us that because that would lower the value of their property, they wanted us to go back in and put that in. And, you know, for there would have been a cost to that, but we also didn't want anybody coming off of that street and pulling into parking lots. And so, because we'd the goal was to eliminate. Oh, sorry.
Time's up.
Yeah.
All right, so let's move to the next item.
If he can turn off his phone.
Okay. And so we approached them and asked if they might want to swap some land that would bring them up to the entrance that we have off of 100 West. And it would also correct, because right now their property extends into some of our parking areas. And so it just doesn't fit the lines that are painted there and the configuration. And so as we looked at that, we presented to them a land swap that would allow them, and then we would allow them to have access to come in through that entrance. And so as they discussed that with the seminary teachers and with the property division of the Corporation of the President of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, they said that that would be a workable option for them. And so it saved us from having to put that entrance back in. It worked better for us as far as alignment with the parking stalls and everything else. And so we swapped a parcel of land for a parcel of their land that would bring that into conjunction. And so we just need to have that approved by the board so that we can sign those contracts and get that that land swap recorded and done.
And they're fine with using our entrance into their property,
right,
at this point,
mm-hmm,
right? Because, yeah, they're planning on keeping the seminary parking where it is.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Superintendent has that on the board, so okay, can you just kind of explain that to the public, what land we're talking,
okay,
about?
Okay. So the what they own right now is parcel A and parcel C. And you can see how that extends into some of our parking. It doesn't fit with the lines. And so what we're swapping, we own parcel B, and so we're swapping parcel B for parcel A. And so their parcel will now be parcel B and parcel C, and that will extend them to that entrance that comes in off 100 West. And so they'll have access to their property from our entrance off of 100 West. And we've allowed, and part of the contract would be in perpetuity, we would allow them to have that access. And so they no longer feel like they need to have a separate entrance. And so, you know,
and
I think
for us, that takes care of our 100 South issue.
Right. It takes care of our 100 South issue, so we don't have to put any money into that as far as restoring that. And then it also means we won't have any entrances off 100 South, which was one thing that we wanted to do with the change. And so that's basically the swap. Any questions?
I'll make a motion to approve the land swap.
I would second that motion.
Okay, motion's been made by Lisa to accept the transfer of land between Logan City School District and the Corporation of the Presiding Bishop of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. It was seconded by Ann. Do we have any further questions or comments to Jeff about the land swap?
No, I was just over there today, and the parking lot looks nice, other than the fact that students still are parking on the ends of marked lines, but
ends of rows, it's always a problem.
Yes.
Well, and by the end of October, that the west parking lot will be finished.
Yeah.
And so hopefully that will at least make that a little bit better situation. I know parking is
right,
tight until they get that finished, and that was always the plan. Is, you know, they knew they would,
yeah,
have to take down Woodruff, and it would take them time to go in and do that parking,
right,
lot. And so,
yeah. No, but I think that it makes the whole parking lot flow much better doing this land swap.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes sense when you go over there.
Yeah.
It's a little hard to picture on here exactly what is happening, but today I went over there to look at it, and it really does make a lot of sense.
Yeah, it does. It straightens it out, but it also,
yeah,
saved us quite a bit of money and hassle,
right,
to work through the whole putting an entrance back into them. And
well, I mean, so, and our purpose was to get all entrances off of that street.
And so it allowed us to meet that purpose, and so, you know, because inevitably you're going to have people pulling in.
They're
there.
They're going to use it
even
anyway,
even
if it's just a seminary,
right,
entrance, yeah.
Right.
Do you know if the church has intentions of identifying that further? I know the parcels are, or the parking stalls are.
Yeah, I believe they are going to put some signs up. I think there's been some confusion. I think a lot of the public doesn't understand that that's their property, that they own those parking lots. And some people think that, oh, well, why have we set aside part of our property? But it's actually property that is owned by them, and it's for their seminary teachers, and so.
There were enough cars parked there when I was there today that I highly doubt it was all seminary parking.
Yeah, and so they've had some run-ins and some issues, and so I think they are going to put up some signs that explain that, okay, you know, this is the seminary property.
It's owned by.
It's owned by them.
That would be nice.
You know, try to, you know, have any, dispel any confusion that mm-hmm. currently exists there, so.
Well, and those of us who've been around for a while, like Christy and I have, that original land swap was the church owned the property in front of Logan High. We would not have been able to build our building had we not done an original land swap, allowing them to have parking on the other side of First South. And so that was a really wonderful deal that we were able to make that exchange, and so that they're willing to give up that entrance also. And it makes a lot more sense on the parcel. So I'm glad we can work with them. And truly, it's much better than them having a parking lot on the front lawn of Logan High, which is what was proposed by them at one time. So, you know, we like to work with their neighbors and make things the best we can for everybody.
Do they do the parking lot maintenance? I mean, do they plow it or repair it if there's problems?
We've done that in the past, and they did talk about fencing, and they still have that option. But if they were to fence it, then we would not, you know, then they would do that themselves. But we've kind of done it because it's just been the parking lot that, yeah, you know. And so our people, as they go through the parking lot, they don't stop and push the snow. They just push it on through. And so they cover that. But if they were to fence it, and that's their decision, they may still decide to fence that. And if they do, then we would no longer do that.
Okay. All right. Any other questions or comments concerning this? All right. We have a motion. We have a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Looks like we've just swapped some property. So that's very good for everybody. And I look forward to having, like Lisa said, or like you said, more parking. And hopefully with that other parking lot, we should have plenty of parking lot. There's still plenty of parking at the tennis courts, just in case anybody ever wants to find a spot.
I also noticed that there are two trailers parked in that parking lot today.
There are trailers parked in the parking lot.
Are they Logan Rex?
I noticed them today. I haven't noticed them in the past.
Okay.
So I've been going over and just doing some spot checks to see, you know, what's our traffic pattern like and what's our parking pattern like, mm-hmm. Both there and also down at the tennis courts. So I'm going to start watching for them because I haven't noticed them before today.
Okay. I just thought that was odd. Students don't pull trailers to school.
No, not generally.
They came when the city was doing that construction on the corner.
Okay.
So I don't know if they're associated with the construction. Okay. I don't know because they've been doing construction down that whole street. So I don't know if they're...
We'll watch and follow up on that one and see.
Yeah. They've been there for a while.
Yes, down there on the tennis court parking. Yes, we parked there for one football game, and I rolled some pipes, some plastic pipes out of the parking lot. It's not that one.
Across from the high school.
Okay.
Right there by the old staff parking, bicycle parking area, just across from the church on Second West.
Very interesting.
It is interesting. All right. Next thing is a discussion. Any other questions about parking? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut anybody off.
We'll just all be happy when the parking lot's done.
We will be happy when the parking lot's done. So anything we can do to get more parking is a very good thing. Now we're going to go on to discussion items, which is review of SAGE data. Do we have our presenters here?
I will be the presenter this evening. Both Jed Grunig and Melissa Richardson are at the PLC conference with our teaching staff who are down there. So I will be
superintendent
sharing this part with the board. And this is all based on conversations that I have had with them, so they have this same information. So you're going to see a number of celebrations here. I'm glad we get to share this. This, of course, is a preliminary overview of some of our recent student achievement data. I've also included a slide where we talk about our most recent AP results. There are a lot of other things that we can dig into, and as the year progresses and as we dig into reports more, we'll share that information with you. For example, this does not have a score breakdown by demographics. This is just an overview. So as we dig into it more, we'll bring more details to the board as the year progresses. But as we look at the student achievement that we see, of course, we want to look at it through the lens of our district mission, ensuring all students leave our schools ready to create a positive future for themselves and their community. We know that their ability to do this is significantly impacted by their academic proficiency. There are certain skills that if they do not develop them, it is going to be much more difficult for them to be successful as they progress through our school system and particularly as they leave high school. Now, we recognize there are other skills and other attributes beyond the academics, but the presentation today focuses just on those. So the first thing we want to do is talk about student growth. And just for everyone looking at this, anytime throughout the presentation where you see a blue number, the blue indicates that we are at or above the state average. So on this chart, you see a lot of blue. This represents the median growth percentiles for each of our elementary schools in each of the areas that are tested, language arts, math, and science. Now, just to recap quickly, student growth percentiles are calculated by the state when a student's progress or a student's growth is compared to other students who scored the same score they did on the previous year's test. So when we talk about student growth as related to SAGE, we're only comparing students to other students who were performing at the same level they were the previous year. You're not comparing the growth of a student who is doing extremely well academically with the growth of a student who is struggling academically. You're only comparing students to students who are performing at their same level. So the percentile gives you a more accurate representation of whether of how a student's growth compares to other students across the state. So as you can see, the 50th percentile is average. Anything above 50 is above average growth. So you can see a number of pretty high numbers. If you look at Ellis, all three of their scores, their median growth percentiles for math, language arts, and science, all above at 60 or above. I apologize. This is not in the board packet. This was emailed to you this afternoon. Okay. I apologize.
I was wondering what they were looking at.
Yeah, we were finalizing it, some issues, some items this morning. Bridger, their math MGP at the 67th percentile. I'll show this to you on another chart, but when compared to when you look at the comparable schools report, that is actually the highest growth rate in the state for students compared to Bridger. So their growth percentiles in math were extremely good. Hillcrest, 54th percentile, 53rd percentile, and 66.5th percentile for growth. You see the numbers there for Wilson, the 72nd percentile in math growth percentile, and then Woodruff, the 55th and the 50th. When you look at that many areas, over 80% of the areas that are tested, our schools had above average growth when compared to their peers across the state. That doesn't happen by accident. That doesn't happen by making sure the right minerals are in the water. That happens when teams of teachers are working closely together to identify student needs and provide targeted, focused support to those students. So this is a great slide. This is a fantastic celebration and something that our teachers and our administrators across our elementary schools should be extremely proud of. As you look at the next slide, we talk about the comparable schools report. And this is where the state office will look at the demographics of a school, school size, student population, students in poverty, students learning English as a second language, etc. And they identify the schools that are statistically comparable to your school, and then they rank schools to determine how did you perform compared to other schools. And they break it into two charts. You have a chart that shows how you ranked based on overall student proficiency, and then they have a ranking that illustrates how you compared to other schools based on student growth. So you're able to see both how well did our students do on the test and how much growth did our students make on the test when compared to comparable schools. My goal, and I visited with the principals about this, is we would like to be in the top five in, on each of those. And with student growth percentiles, the way that's calculated, currently you can do that. Previously, under No Child Left Behind in the CRTs, all students' growth was kind of lumped together. So the growth of a student who was academically excelling was lumped together with that of a student who was struggling. And students who are excelling academically do make growth in smaller increments, generally. They still make growth, they still make progress, but it's the difference between going from 0 to 60 and 60 to 75 miles per hour.
Or going from fourth grade to fifth grade instead of going from second grade to fourth grade. You still made 2 years growth, but you're not quite to fifth grade yet.
Right. So the SGP is a much clearer representation of student growth. So the rankings, if you look at how we do both on terms of proficiency and growth, I think being in the top five is a reasonable objective. Jed Kunick has been digging into this a little bit more, and he's found that for us to move into the top five and move into that range is generally a change of 2 to 3 points. It's not a huge change. So that's something that he'll be talking about as well. Again, on this chart, you see the blue is anytime we are in the top five. So again, you see several instances where either in terms of proficiency or in terms of growth, our students have been ranked in the top five in the state when compared to schools that look like theirs. You'll see there, of course, Bridger's math growth first, Adams math proficiency second, their science proficiency fourth, Ellis in the top five across the board in all areas, Hillcrest in the top five in language arts and math proficiency, top three in science proficiency, top three in science growth. And again, you see those similar numbers for Wilson and Woodruff. Now, obviously, this also highlights a couple of areas where we would like to improve our performance. Jed and the principals and teachers are aware of those. And as we get to the end of this presentation, we have a slide that talks about what actions are being taken, what are the things that schools are doing to work on these. But again, significant celebrations of what our students are accomplishing and the work that our teachers and principals are doing with those students. Do you have any questions on either of the first two slides with the elementary data?
I have a question about the. It's interesting to me. Excuse me, my throat's really bad still. How the we're ranked higher in math, but our language arts were like 50%. So do you feel like there's any correlation between that and the switch to the new reading program we have?
No. I think what you're seeing...
What the name of it is.
Yeah, what you're seeing with the math scores, I think, is more indicative of the work that Barbara Child did with the principals and the teachers in terms of providing consistent lesson study, as well as the district math benchmarks and consistent assessment tools, the use of Mastery Connect at all of our elementary schools. Because of the tools that have been provided at our elementaries, I would suggest that the PLC process of setting essential standards, having clear assessments tied to those standards, and then a process for reviewing student performance data and making adjustments to instruction based on that is more developed with math than it is currently with language arts. And that's because of the tools that were available and the processes that were supported. So I don't think what you see is a reflection of the language arts curriculum. I think what you see is a reflection of the positive work that has been done over the last few years with math. And now what's happening is the groups of teachers at each school are developing those same processes and those same tools for reading and language arts that they had with math.
And that was going to be my question. Now that we've lost Title II funds for those district coordinators for those things, so that will now be done on a site base with Jed or Melissa working with them to make sure that happens, correct?
Yes. So where we split the director position into two, that provides more time for Jed to work closely with the principals and work more closely with the coaches on how they support their teams in moving through that process.
Good.
So, yeah, so that
we want a consistent over all six elementaries because
Right. Our
kids, I looked at the state thing on mobility, our kids move so much, they need to have that at every elementary school,
mm-hmm.
not just at one or two.
Right. And I'll share, as we get to the end, one of the things, I'll walk through the process that Jed and Melissa are leading the principals with in our trainings that they're then taking back to their schools to help with creating that consistency across the board. Thank you. Those are excellent questions. Any other questions on the elementary slides? Okay, as we get into the middle school, a couple of great celebrations. Of course, again, you'll see the blue with language arts growth in all three grades being at or above the state average with their growth. That's fantastic. The math growth, 58.5 for 7th grade, and the science growth of the 77th percentile for 7th grade science, that is an outstanding number. That is fantastic. And, of course, we know that that's an outstanding team of teachers that has worked really well as a professional learning community, very consistent process for reviewing student outcomes and making adjustments to help their students succeed. So very positive growth scores with Mount Logan. You'll see another positive thing that we'll reference as we get into school grades with Mount Logan. But this is very positive. Some of the other celebrations you see there, 6th grade increased their language arts proficiency by 14% this year. That's a significant gain in proficiency. 7th grade ELA increased their proficiency by 5%. And then you see that going down, 6th grade math had an increase, 6th grade science had an increase, and 7th grade science had an increase. So very consistently across the middle school, we see increases in student performance. And that's due to things that are happening across all classes, across the entire school. That's not something that's impacted just by what's happening in the English classes or what's happening in the math classes. That's happening because of consistent conversations that teachers are having with students and concepts that are being reinforced across the building.
I look at this, and I remember last year Daryl showed us how they were working with the sixth grade teachers. All the sixth grade teachers were receiving a certain training, and they were getting together, and they were determining those tests that were consistent.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this shows that work that they specifically did with that grade and how they really are achieving great things through the processes they're using.
We see steady, consistent growth. And that, again, you all have heard me say this, but it bears repeating. Proficiency scores are great, but growth is fantastic because growth scores reflect progress of all students. Proficiency tells you who has met the proficiency benchmark, but a high growth score tells you that all of your students are making the desired progress that you want them to make, regardless of where they are on the academic spectrum. If they're struggling or they're excelling, a high growth score says that everybody is making growth. So with our principals and with our teachers, we will continue to push. We're working towards proficiency, but the most important metric we're looking at is student growth. Because regardless of when a child comes into our school, we should be able to say they're going to make progress. And you're going to see some really exciting...
7th grade is amazing.
Yeah, and you're going to see some really exciting data with that on our next slide as well. So this is the high school test data.
Oh, sorry, I have a question.
Oh,
it's about middle school.
I apologize, yes.
What I was wondering the other day is, do you know if there's any data that says that SAGE scores for 6th grade are different if the environment is elementary versus secondary? So do 6th grade test better if...
I'm not aware of data that's been pulled on that. We can look into that. But I'm not aware of anything that's reflected that yet.
I just wondered if they ever considered that just because there are some districts that have
mm-hmm.
6th grade in elementary, and I don't know if that would increase their... I don't know. I just was wondering about that.
We can follow up. A lot of times the reason for moving 6th grade up is to make sure that 9th grade is in the high schools because there is a lot of data that supports that ninth graders are more successful in a high school than they are in a junior high setting. So to kind of equalize your enrollment, I mean, that often happens, but we can dig into that, and we can find out if there's some data that's been pulled at the state level.
It kind of would be interesting to me to see if there's an impact, you know, in the environment they're in versus what their scores might be.
And Daryl referenced that they have a different slot because they have elementary, seventh and eighth,
right,
versus those that are just middle,
mm-hmm,
or
would
junior high.
Just would be interesting to know that because I'm pretty sure the county, they have sixth grade in elementary, correct?
Yes.
Well,
yeah,
now they do everywhere.
So it'd be
switched it, but it would only have been partial last year.
Yeah, South End would have been and North End would have been.
But we could find that. There are enough districts in the state that have it that we could find some information.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Okay. The high school. You see there are up above the first box there are the science tests that are measured with SAGE, and then on the left the language arts tests, and on the right the math tests. A couple things you see again on science as you look at the growth percentiles, again 57th percentile, 65th, and 51st percentile, even in our higher classes, chemistry and physics. Those are examples of classes that are being taken by students who are excelling academically, and they're still performing well with both the proficiency when compared to the state, as well as their growth being above the state average. Language arts, of course, on SAGE, we only test language arts in 9th and 10th grade, so you can see both the score and the proficiency rate there, and the growth rate. And then finally, our math scores, math 1, 2, and 3. Math 3, again, these are students who are pursuing a rigorous course of study. To have 82.5% proficiency and a growth score of the 73rd percentile, that's the score that reflects these are highly successful students, and they are still making significantly above average growth in their academic performance. Now, this page also highlights some areas of need. And we'll talk about what the school is doing to work on these, but you know, proficiency scores in earth science are obviously a concern, and as well as the proficiency score in ninth grade language arts. The one caveat I would add, to a discussion of SAGE scores at the high school, is we know that students across the state, student engagement and investment in SAGE has declined over time. So low SAGE scores, unfortunately, because they are not tied to grades, they aren't looked at by universities, they are a low stakes test for students, high stakes test for schools.
Well, and you also have a large number opting out.
That's what I was going to ask.
Right.
What is our opt-out level?
At the high school, we had 103 students opt out last year. They were all students who scored threes or fours on the previous year's CRT, or the previous year's
SAGE. So it hurts us.
Yes. And you'll see that when we get into school grades. That's where it becomes most relevant. So low SAGE scores, I think, have to be taken with a grain of salt. We don't have very clear data yet on what is causing those scores. High SAGE scores indicate you have students that are invested and engaged. Low SAGE scores could be a reflection of low proficiency, or they could be a reflection of low engagement. We don't have a way of parsing that out right now. So low SAGE scores, we're aware of them. We use them as, this might be something that we need to look at, but we shouldn't make too many decisions based on them.
I'm just glad they now allow us to not just do algebra. You know, that really was not reflective of a high school when you only tested algebra or geometry.
Right.
Because all of our higher-end kids were in those advanced math scores. So I'm glad they're doing math 1, 2, and 3, all three levels. That really helps. We still don't include our calculus kids, but at least those other three levels are there, and I think that's much more reflective of what actually goes on in a high school.
Yes, definitely.
So if you have a freshman who's taking Math 3, their score would be in the Math 3 category, correct?
Even yes.
A freshman.
That'd be highly unlikely, but yes.
Whatever
if you had a freshman
in,
taking it, that would be the test that they
But took. If you had a kid, if you had a student in a non-tested subject in math, so what'd you say, whatever.
AP statistics.
Statistics, they wouldn't be tested, correct?
Correct.
And calculus isn't tested.
Right. So the more high-end math classes you have, that's more students who are not taking SAGE, whose growth and proficiency are not reflected in your SAGE scores.
At least they're letting us do Math 3.
Right.
But you can't have those students that are taking those classes take the Math 1 test?
No, you would only have them take the test for the courses they're in.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you can't stack it.
But we could stack it.
I know, I was wondering if you could.
So this comes out to school grades, which, of course, were released this week by the State Office of Education. You see there the three-year comparison for school grades in our district. You'll recall that the last year they raised the bar, so the standard for getting a grade has increased. Some of the things that are not reflected in this chart, but we do need to celebrate. Mount Logan's score, you see, has gone from a C to a C to a B. What this chart doesn't reflect is the point values that lead to those scores have increased significantly over that same period of time. I believe, and I apologize, I didn't include that here, but I believe in the chart that Principal Guyman sent me, we're talking nearly 100-point difference in 3 years to get up to the B. So that, again, is a reflection of work that the teachers at Mount Logan have been doing consistently over time, refining, improving, and addressing the needs of their students. So, again, school grades, because of the issues with SAGE testing, because of the issues with opt-outs, school grades are a piece of data that we look at and say, okay, good to know, but we don't make decisions based off school grades, because there are a number of other factors that come into play that cause it to be a less reliable data point for us. Any questions about that?
I always feel bad for the principals and the staff when their grade goes down. How are those schools adjusting to that?
Well,
the two that we have.
The two that we have where the grades have gone down, what they do is they look at those and they identify, okay, well, what's the reality of our school? It's caused us, you know, Jed Grunick and I were having discussions about how we provide the appropriate level of district support to those schools. You're not going to go into any school in our district and identify, wow, that score or that grade is due to bad teacher practice. You're just not going to find that. What we're talking about is, are there areas where we can adjust how we allocate resources to provide some additional support to these schools that are highly impacted? Bridger is a highly impacted
high
school.
Poverty.
High poverty and high transition. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, the transition causes more of a challenge than the poverty. So those create some unique issues. So there is a potential need for additional support. So we're looking at how we provide that. And the principals, what we emphasize with the principals is we say, look, every school has some significant things to celebrate. The recognition of areas for continued improvement should never detract from those celebrations, just like the celebration should never detract from, hey, there are a couple of areas where our students need some additional help. And I think that's one of the things we try to emphasize, is not that these scores indicate that the teaching staff did a poor job. These scores indicate we have students that need additional help. What can we do to provide the best help possible with what's available to us? And that's what we're trying to emphasize. Finally, the last piece of data here is the ACT. You'll see there first a a comparison going back from to year 2013 up to the graduating class of 2017, and their scores on each section of the ACT, including their composite score. Our scores have generally held close to the state average. We're generally within a couple tenths of a point of the state average, and that continues to be the case. In 2014, we were above the state average. The rest of the years, we are either at or a couple of tenths of a point slightly below. Below, the box you see on the bottom shows the percentage of our students who meet each of the college readiness benchmarks. Just to recap, the college readiness benchmarks are where ACT has looked at their data, and they've seen if you meet this benchmark, you have a 50% chance or better of getting a B or higher in your freshman year college classes, or a 75% chance or higher of getting a C or higher. So ACT looks at the historical data of students who have taken the ACT and how successful they were in their first year of college, and they've identified if you meet these benchmarks, odds are good, you're going to be successful your freshman year. And at the bottom, in italics there, you see the benchmarks. The benchmark score for English composition is 18, algebra was 22, social science was 22, and biology was 23. So you see 49% of our students met the English composition benchmark, and that score is based on the students who took the test that year. So you will have some juniors for whom it's their first taking of the test. You'll have some seniors for whom it's their second or third. But it's based on the students who took it in that testing. Algebra, 29%, social science, 38%, biology, 29%, and we had 21% of our students meet all four of the college readiness benchmarks.
What year did we start offering, well, not offering, but I guess requiring?
Requiring the testing?
Yeah. It's been quite a few years. We were part of the pilot.
Yeah, I think we did it earlier than the rest of the state, so I want to say 5 or 6 years. So I believe that the data that we have reflects all students, which is one of the things as you compare Utah's data to other states. Not all states test everybody. Yeah. You know, Utah does because we believe it's a valuable tool for identifying whether our students are prepared to succeed in college. But not all states do that. So when you see a state that has, you know, significantly higher scores, or they're meeting all four benchmarks, you have 50, or I believe some of the highest are actually around 44-46% of students meeting all four benchmarks. Those are not necessarily states where all students are tested. That being said, our goal is that we help our students meet those benchmarks, because one of our goals that's tied to our mission of helping them, you know, be successful after high school is ensuring that they have the skills that will allow them to be successful once they reach college. And the college readiness benchmarks have been shown to be a fairly decent indicator of how prepared a student is to succeed in college. It's not always, you know, there are arguments about whether it's the best. There are other criteria we could look at, but that they come with much more involved processes. This is a fairly straightforward number that does reflect, you know, are our students prepared to succeed with college-level work. So one of our goals is to improve and increase the number of students who are meeting all of those benchmarks. So we talk a little bit more about the benchmarks than we do the composite score. Even though on college applications you're looking more at the composite score, in terms of our students' readiness for college-level work, we're focusing more on the benchmarks.
Well, and usually students take the ACT more than once.
Yes.
So if this is just the, you know, a mixture of all students for, you know, taking the test, you could have a high number of freshmen taking it for the first time and only a few, you know, seniors who have taken it two or three times. So it's kind of interesting that the scores probably would be different if you took the end test of that everybody took, but I'm sure that's very hard to come up with that.
So you're going to have people who, this is generally you're seeing between one to three takings of the test.
Yeah.
ACT's data suggests that after your third taking of the test, your score is not going to increase.
Yeah.
Generally, it starts to go down a little bit after the third taking. So what you're seeing here is a mix of people who are taking it the first time up to the third time.
Yeah.
So with all of this, what are we doing? Well, First of all, we're continuing to promote the professional learning community process. We continue to provide ongoing training. As we've already stated, Jen and Melissa are both at a training today. They have teachers with them. They have a number of people from every school who are down in Salt Lake attending a three-day training on this. So we continue to promote the ideals and the processes that are involved in professional learning communities. We have schools that are looking at modified scheduling, and the reason for that is to provide support between teachers and modified scheduling to provide targeted interventions for students. Adams Elementary is one school that really has run with that this year. They have modified their schedule, so they have school-wide blocks of time set aside for both remediation and enrichment for students. So if you have students who students are able to receive the level of help that they need. So if you have a student who is in first grade and is capable of higher grade level work, there is a time during the day where they are able to have that opportunity and get that work. If you have a student who needs more intensive intervention support, there are times set aside during the day that are specifically intended to provide that. So our schools are working with their teaching staff to identify how can we provide the structures that allow us to get the targeted intervention and enrichment that our students need based on their performance. And a very clear criteria for successful teams. One of the things that we've been doing with our principals, and kudos to Jed Grunig and Lisa Richardson for leading this process, is they're working as a group to identify what are the success criteria for a successful professional learning community. Meaning what, as we've been to the trainings, whether it's with Mike Maddow, so the Solution Tree trainings, they talk about what are the artifacts that are produced, what are the behaviors that characterize a highly effective team. And we talk about, okay, what would that look like? So now here is the success criteria for a team, and then the principals take that back with their teachers and they have conversations with teams of teachers of how are we doing this? What does this look like for us? So it's creating, or it's building, a more consistent understanding of what the expectations are for professional learning communities, what highly successful learning communities do, and how we can support that at each school. So the first thing that we're doing is we're continuing to promote powerful teaming and effective use of professional learning communities. At every level, we're working on targeted interventions and supports. You've heard what the elementaries are doing. The middle school has been working on course schedules and classes that identify students early who require additional help and put them in situations where they can get that targeted support, whether it's in their math labs or their reading, their academies. Then they've done that both with reading and with math. So students are getting targeted support early in their experience so we can help them be more successful. Gear Up at the high school is working to track students' performance on the ACT so we can get them additional help and do some targeted interventions to ACT support. One of the things that we are doing and that Melissa is working on is the students have the ability through some of the Gear Up activities they do to identify what colleges they want to apply to and what ACT scores generally needed to gain admittance into that school. Once they take the ACT, we then review the data and we can identify, okay, you needed to score a 28 on the ACT to get into the school of your choice. You scored a 26. Let's get you into ACT prep because we need to raise your score 2 points. So let's start talking about how we're going to do that. And that then allows for targeted invitations and targeted conversations as to what can we do to help you be more successful with the goals that you've already set. So at all of our schools, we're promoting PLCs. We're looking for ways, and it looks a little bit different at each school, but we're looking for ways to provide those targeted interventions and supports. And at the high school level, the additional pieces, we're looking at how can we get better data on who are the individual students who need that additional ACT support and how do we get them into the workshops that we have, the additional ACT tutoring, the resources provided through Schmoop that have online ACT prep courses and tutorials, really making sure that we're giving more students not giving more students the opportunity, but we are actively pulling those students in and ensuring that they receive that support. So with that, I'd be happy to discuss any questions that you have about the data, about the approaches that we're taking to respond to the data, anything that you all would like to discuss.
This is a bit different, but at the USBA Leadership Academy, one of our classes was on poverty, and people were shocked that Logan District is number 5 in the amount of poverty in school districts. Cache School District, though, and so if you look by county, it's very different than if you look by school district. And I had several individuals just be shocked by that. And so that was part of the discussion, and we had some amazing classes on poverty. And I think that's something we have to understand. And the one was, we also received that report, which I sent to all of you, on intergenerational poverty. And that intergenerational poverty cycle is harder to break than, say, when we have our new immigrants and they're coming in and we, you know, there's a difference. And so it's made me, though we've always known we've had, well, in the last 16 years or so, we've known we've had an increase in poverty. But I can see we have to think differently than the neighbors that are 2 blocks over from where I live on the north end of town, because we do have much greater poverty. And so I'm glad that we're able to compare schools like schools, rather than, you know, you need to look at the minorities, you need to look at the poverty. And I just think our teachers and administration are doing amazing jobs with some really challenging issues that we have, that our, and our students have to deal with every day, therefore our teachers have to deal with. So I'm just really appreciative of, I look at those growth scores, and I think, yes, that truly is what we need to celebrate, because we have a lot of really hard work going on in our schools.
Well, and amen. I mean, our teachers and principals are doing an amazing job with the, with these students. Tied to what you stated, there are some additional challenges for students who come from backgrounds of poverty. The transiency ties to that, instability. There are a lot of issues.
Well, there. And the trauma in their home. We had another class
right.
on trauma, which really opened my eyes to a lot of issues. And I know that at Bridger, the principal sent out a note to teachers saying we need to look at the amount of trauma some of these students are dealing with. And so that we understand them better. And that was another class that really opened my eyes as to what is trauma and how does it affect students and their performance.
So one of the things that we're starting to work on with our principals now is, in our last administrator meeting, we shared some of our SHARPS survey data, and we'll share that with the board in a meeting and discuss some of this. Alan Grunig is preparing to come and do that with us. But one of the things we discussed is we, obviously, as we work towards our mission as a school district, academic performance is an important component of the ability that students have to reach that mission. If they can't perform academically, the opportunities for their future success are limited. Additionally, there are, you know, and you can use the term soft skills or whatever you want to describe them, there are a number of other behaviors, attitudes, perspectives that we take on life and the world around us that students also have to develop to be successful. The ability to persist, the ability to set goals, the ability to self-monitor, the ability to manage one's emotional state. Those are all things that have to be developed as well. And many times, students from backgrounds of poverty have not developed those skills in the same way, or perhaps to the same degree that they need to be successful. So we have to have some discussions about what are we going to do as a district to ensure that we're also addressing that side of our students' needs. So what I've told the principals is this year we're going to do some group study to identify what our district approach to developing those skills is going to be. Are we going to work with a prepackaged program that exists? Are we going to develop something on our own? What will our approach be? We're going to begin by investigating Leader in Me, because that is something that many of our schools are familiar with. There are resources to support it, so we're going to look at it through that lens. And then we also have some other approaches that we're going to investigate. The goal is to identify what are we going to do consistently to teach these skills. I met with Larry Comedina this morning while I was over at the high school, and this is what we talked about. What do we do for these students who are struggling behaviorally, who have not developed these thought processes or these behavioral norms? How can we start teaching them early on so it gets reinforced across the district? One great example of something that teachers are doing is, as I've told you before, what the teachers at Adams have been doing with their teaching of the learning pit, and helping students persist through learning difficulties and take concrete steps to get through those difficulties. That's a behavioral skill that needs to be explicitly taught and practiced and reinforced. So those types of things, they're doing fantastic things. And we have teachers at every school that are addressing these issues, but our approach is piecemeal. So one of the things that we are working on is this year identifying what will our approach be to move from a piecemeal approach to developing soft skills to a consistent, deliberate approach, K-12 in the district.
Thank you, Superintendent. Any other questions or comments about that?
I'm glad we have action plans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, me too. And it will be interesting to see how their school improvement plans revolve around this. So can you make sure that this information is integrated in our board packet so we can refer back to it, this presentation that you emailed us?
Yes.
So that we can look at it in the future.
Definitely.
So I like to look at those things when we go back through school improvement plans to make sure that we're kind of aligned. Not that they have to be based, but I certainly think they would take into account that information. Yeah. So I agree, great things happening in our schools. This morning they said on the news that, I don't know if anybody else saw that, but Utah ranks, teachers in Utah, Utah has the 11th highest ranking for teachers in the country, which I thought was great. Teachers want to be in Utah. Number one was, I think, New York, and the worst state was Arizona. So number 11 is pretty good for teachers. So
I heard that today.
Is that what it was? It was the top? I don't exactly know how to phrase it. Most content place to teach? Is that what it was? Anyway, so we've got great things happening, and I just want to celebrate the progress and to celebrate the good things, because there's definitely a lot of great things to celebrate, and I hope that people aren't discouraged and, you know, disheartened when they see that information, because there's so much that goes into SAGE testing. I mean, you have so many pullouts and so much publicity about SAGE testing, so it's it's nice to be able to have that as a working point, but I'm grateful that we don't have to base everything that we do on this data. So thank you very much. The last thing that we have is just our reports. We'll start with our financial report by Jeff.
Okay, you'll see that if you start on the first page with Fund 10, we're getting a little bit of revenue come in. We won't start seeing much until September, at least in the state sources. We've got a little bit from tax revenue from local sources. As far as expenditures, you'll see that instruction, student support services are down because this just covers through the end of August. So teachers haven't been paid yet as far as this report, and so those percentages are lower. The others are a little bit higher. We have a negative there in transportation. What that means is we pay cash quarterly to do the busing, and apparently there was an adjustment made, and so that's put us in a negative. So it's a good thing. It's fine. But as soon as we make our first quarterly payment, that will be wiped out. Also, the other uses and financial sources, that's just an estimate that's put in there at the beginning of the year, and so the 87% shouldn't alarm anyone. Debt service fund, we've got a little bit of revenue. We haven't made any payments to any of our bonds yet, so that's not going to show for a few months. Capital projects, You know, we're still paying a little over $1 million a year for, I mean, a month for our payments, you know, to, but we'll get that paid off in the next few months. And so, and then food service fund, you're not seeing much there because, you know, it's just through the end of August. And so there weren't a lot of lunch sales reported. And so are there any other questions specifically about the finances and the budget? Okay, thanks.
All right. Thank you very much. Next is our report from our superintendent, Frank Schofield.
Thank you. Just a couple things to celebrate as we move on. First of all, we were going to share this anyway, but we have John Westenskow here, and as you all know, we want to publicly recognize him. John was recently recognized as Utah Art Education Teacher of the Year, nominated by his peers, and he'll be recognized at their annual conference later this year. But it's been neat. Over the last 3 years, we've had somebody every year in our district who's been recognized by their either their state association or some other organization as a highly professional, skilled educator in their field. So we want to recognize him for that, and that's a credit to him and, of course, a credit to Mount Logan for having him there. Just building on that with on the art theme, just two things to let you know about. Our AP art students went up from the high school, went up to Tony Grove today as a field trip. They were doing painting, and it was AP art and AP photo and AP painting, I'm sorry, who went up there, and we've got some pictures of what they were doing. But as I visited with Jeff Ashcroft, our painting teacher, about what they were accomplishing and what the goals of the trip were, it was just fantastic to see what they were doing to support those students who are performing at a high level and really to continue their development. We then, this afternoon, I was over at the high school walking through with some of the videographers from Rescue One Studios because we're getting ready to go do some filming there next week for the videos they're making for us. And we again went down to the art rooms, and we showed them where Ned Pelotu has his sculpture and stone carving room. And Logan High is, just so everyone's aware, Logan High is the only high school in the state of Utah that has large stone sculpting as a class that is offered at the school. It's one of the few high schools in the country where you can do that on school premises. And the right now the students are working with hand tools, but the room is set up for the addition of pneumatic equipment that will, of course, speed up the process. They've almost got that installed. But as we walked in and we saw the projects that are currently being worked on, there are huge pieces of rock being carved in that room, which, again, a fantastic art opportunity that very few students in the country have. And that is because, one, we have Nev, who is capable and committed and just an incredibly skilled artist, let alone an art teacher, but also the commitment to providing the facilities and the resources that can allow that. That's something I wanted to report on. That will be highlighted in the videos that we create. The Rescue One people walked out somewhat, they were shocked at what was provided, and of course they got to visit for a moment with Nev about that and see and hear what he's doing with our students. So I just want to celebrate what our teachers and what our administrators and what the board has done to support those programs at our schools. And we continue to work. Last year I worked with the music teachers at our secondary to identify an appropriate music curriculum for our elementary schools. And now our elementary music specialists are working with their principals on how to implement that so we have a consistent music curriculum across all of the elementaries. And right now we're identifying what tools and what resources have to be provided to support that and make it possible. But those are some fantastic things that are happening. When we see continued growth and commitment from our teachers in, you know, what we would call elective courses, and we see the growth and the commitment from the teachers who are teaching our academic courses, that is one of the things that makes our schools able to provide a holistic, well-rounded complete experience for our students. And that's something that our staff should be very proud of, the board should be very proud of, and our community should be very proud of. Other than that, we've met pretty recently, so I don't have any additional information to report at this time.
All right. Thank you very much, Superintendent. The only calendaring items I have are listed in Board Book, which would be our fall regional meeting, which will be October 3rd, 6 o'clock at the County, Cache County School District Board Professional Development Building. Our next board meeting is October 10th, and then we have the Joint Legislative Luncheon with Cache. They'll be doing, if you'll notice that, they're doing something different. We'll be taking a tour of our schools, and then we'll meet with the Cache County School Board in a joint lunch. So I think that's a great change to that, and it'll be fun to be able to take our legislators into the schools and have them see the amazing things that are happening. And then if you'll just reflect upon the pancake breakfast we have, as well as our boundary study meetings, and then we'll want to make sure that hopefully, oh, we won't have Jenny tomorrow for Wilson, will we? Is it tomorrow's Wilson, correct, for boundary study?
Yes, tomorrow evening.
At 6 o'clock.
Yeah, we moved it to Wednesday, so it would not create a...
I still had mine down at Thursday, and I could go on Thursday.
Sorry, it was moved to Wednesday, so we wouldn't create a conflict with the Logan High football game on Thursday night.
I have a PAC meeting tomorrow night, so I won't be there.
I'll have to look at my schedule, but I might be able to come.
Okay.
And I also might be able to, so I will work on getting there.
So that's
there.
At 6 o'clock, correct? All of those, 6 o'clock they start. Yeah. Okay, and then we'll just make sure that we adjourn next board meeting on the 10th. Any other calendaring items that you're aware of, Stacy, or any other board members? There's always great things happening at the schools. It's fun to have activities starting back up, so if you have a desire to attend any school, I'm sure they'd have something there happening if you just research a bit. All right, with that, anything else, Superintendent or business, or Jeff? Okay, board members? All right, with that, we'll adjourn this meeting at 6:08. Thank you all for coming tonight.
I received the digital file of the Minerva Tiger
today.
Oh, good.
Okay.
So he sent it as a link where I can download it, it's a compressed file. Did you catch that down? We've got the invoice that we're working on getting that payment. It was $100 for that. So we'll... As soon as I get that downloaded, I'll put it on a jump drive and I'll put it up screen prints.
Nice.
And
we're good to go. It looks nice. The colors really.
That's what I've heard. So.
Yeah. I was